Dear Venerable Sisters and Brothers, Dhamma Friends, welcome everyone for the evening of a discussion or rather interviews. So I would invite Ramani to read out questions, please.
Dear Venerable Sir, could you please elaborate on the sound of silence? How is it achieved and what are the benefits of it towards meditation? Thank you.
It is very difficult to introduce, but someone, if you already got it, then you can make use it as a additional support for your mindfulness and the concentration. But otherwise, very difficult to introduce it because it is like introducing water to a fish. The water is always around the fish. So how can I introduce water to a fish? Likewise, those who have already knows, they can make use it. But otherwise, usually you may continue with the normal way of mindfulness with the in-breath and out-breath or whatever may be the object. When you keep on practicing, whenever you feel the inner silence, inner peace, then that inner silence, inner peace and inner space is represented by kind of a sound. So it is presented as sound of silence. So some people feel the lightness of the body, some people feel light perception, and some feel space. And one of the facet of that state of mind is kind of a sound. It indicates that you are isolated. Solitude, your solitude and your freedom. So that is also a indicator to say that mind is now inwardly, but it is very difficult to introduce it. But it's a good sign to say mind is inwardly, and you find very easy to keep the mindfulness with whatever the object you like. This as a hint, this as a symbol, this as a sign for inner peace, inner space.
Today, while in meditation, the sense of separateness was experienced. While watching the breath rise and fall in the chest area, the heartbeat stroke pulse became prominent. This then went into slow motion, then stopped. The sense of stillness was felt within. Breath can still be observed as rising and fall. After a while, the heartbeat pulse like playing could be felt again. Will this happen again? This was experienced once while listening to your Dhamma talk this afternoon as well. The only word I can think of to describe it is stillness. Your comments are greatly appreciated. Thank you, sir.
This is also something related to the early question. So when the mind comes at home, when the mind go back to this original form, it is rather centered rather than superficial, and it is not related to any sense organs like eye, ear, nose, tongue or body. They take little distance from everything, but you can experience kind of a contentment, kind of a satisfaction, saturation. And you have the ability to go to sounds, go to thoughts, go to your bodily sensations. Equally, you have the equal ability to not to go. You can be in the center. And that is the only moment the mind is experiencing the totality. Otherwise, mind is always partial. If as far as you are looking, mind is directed to that, all the other faculties are completely cut off. And if you are listening, others are cut off. But here, nothing open, nothing cut off, and therefore it is kind of a contentment. So when it comes, that indicates the mind is now ready for the inner journey. And rather, then onward, the particular meditator has nothing to do. Now mind knows. We have to go still further to the center, and therefore the particular yogi has, if at all any duty, It is to not to create any troubles, not to create unwanted turmoils, and just to give the facilitating and contribute in terms of not disturbing. And therefore, he or she has to maintain this as long as possible without disturbing. Main disturbances are your will, your wish, your determination, and your different ways of conditioning of your mind. It appears like very smart, very skillful, but anything you are going to add is like a dust fallen on your eye. Best thing is to let the mind to, or best thing is to put autopiloting. Then onward it knows. But that does not, it means that you have to completely do away with anything, but you have to take care to make sure the facilities, conditions for this to maintain. So, sound of silence is also part and partial of this experience. And I got a small booklet from Venerable Amaro, written in Amaravati, on the sound of silence. It's a very good, precise book. Maybe free distribution, even for the first question. That book is a good introduction, and it is talking about the historical references, other traditions, when and where it has been literally mentioned. So that is also recommended specifically to the early question, somewhat related to the second question also.
Sometimes I miss the track of watching the play. What I do is, I put my eyes behind my nostrils and watch the drama in there. That is, if I pass it in and out, it is beginning and end. Is this the way to watch the play, or are there any other efficient ways of doing this? Apologies for being this question and table to that.
So that whenever you are missing the track of breath, that is the case, isn't it?
Sometimes I miss the track of watching breath.
Yeah. So, when you're watching the track of the breath, happen due to two reasons, maybe three reasons, but two in a positive way. One thing is breath is not available. Second thing is mind is wandering off. So, therefore, if the breath is disappearing, the one clue that you can do is, it never happens at once. It happens in a gradual basis. So therefore, before it becomes completely unperceivable and disappearance, it becomes subtle. So whenever the breath becomes subtle, you have to understand now, next episode is that breath becomes completely dissolving off. So try to catch the transition point where you can perceive the last drop. From then onward, it is unperceivable. So, unperceivability in that sense is an advancement or positive character. But whenever the mind is unmindful and negligent, and then also mind take other tracks, wandering, that is that basically happen because that the subtle breath is very boring, very monotonous. And very sleepy. So instead mind is searching some other objects. These both positive. So when and where that disappearance happens, after a while, if the mind is going to associate a thought or sound or pain, what happens is the mind becomes again disturbed. Body also get more alert. And again the breath appears. So then again you can see through these distractions, again the breath becomes somewhat perceivable, but here suggesting something still different, just to see whatever the visual objects going to happen, not with your physical eye, but its appearance. That means that the person who is raising the question knows the breath is not perceivable, instead there is a visual screen, you just maintain it, and ultimately they also become fading off slowly. And sometimes bodily sensation happens outside the breathing area, they also give a little bit of objects and that also ceases to exist. The visual objects also cease to exist. So when it is keep on practicing, you sometimes develop the kind of mindfulness which can continue without an object. And they are, whenever the mind settles on that particular mindfulness, are called animitta samadhi. There's no object as such, but without the even the absence of this object won't make any problem. Mindfulness continues, concentration continues. So therefore, you have to develop devices, ways and means how to maintain the confidence, how to develop the preparedness for this kind of a situation, and easily mind can find a lot of ways and means, and main thing is to not to entertain doubts, not let the mind to fall into sleep, and don't get up and go. Instead, season it, as he suggested, also a valid way.
This is a gap between the in-breath and the out-breath, and the sound of silence, the same thing?
I have to say yes and no, both. Because whenever you go to start to feel the gap, you are observing, as far as the materiality is concerned, you are confronted with space. It is no more earth element, air element, water element or fire element, but the volume, free of the four elements, that is called space. As far as the feelings are concerned, it is no pain, no pleasure, somewhat in between, neutral feeling. And as far as the perception is concerned, whenever you perceive the gap, there's a kind of a perception that you can't put into words. And in Kalavivada Sutta, the Buddha mentioned, na sanya sanyi, nopya sanyi, na vibhuta sanyi. That means this, you are not conscious, you are not perceiving the day-to-day perception. And you know it is, you are not unfainted. And you know you are not sleepy. But kind of a perception is there. And as far as the fabrication, volition, willful action is concerned, you are completely silent. No any addition, no any determination, visankhara gata, you are not going to give any kind of thing. And the vijnanava is concerned, it can't see in and out difference, it can't see the time, present, future and the past, it's just become a present moment. And you become the whole universe become the present place. So vijnana also loses the polarity, the duality. Under such circumstances, the sound of silence is very prominent. That is not sound of silence, but otherwise you are worrying and busy with the sounds, external sounds, that is sometimes threatening your existence or sometimes promoting your existence. But the sound of silence is, you are in the present moment. So therefore this gap at the beginning not so clear as I mentioned, but when you are mastering it, once it becomes your second nature, once you feel at home in the gap, you slowly, slowly understand this gap has a lot of qualities, but very difficult to put into words. Very difficult to put into grammatical presentation, but experience is very solid. Experience is very contentment. It is kind of a saturation. But rational mind entertain doubts. Rational mind always asking, am I progressing or am I lost with my mindfulness and the concentration? Feel like lost. Feel like completely disoriented. You have no clue to say whether you are in the north or south. So that some entertain the uncertainty, fearfulness and doubts. That is happening due to the rational mind. So these things you have to season slowly, slowly, and ultimately The day that it becomes your second nature, then only you can understand the, how much guidance you can get it from the sound of silence for this maturity, for this seasoning, for this mastery of this gap. So therefore it is a big subject, multifaceted, multidimensional subject.
The last few days I have been waking up with my whole body vibrating. Today it seemed to hum like a machine of some sort. I feel it at night too and sometimes can't fall asleep. I feel these vibrations whenever the mind is quiet. Yesterday I asked you about the sound of silence. I am in the silence with the whole body humming and vibrating. Should I just be mindful or observe the breath? When I am aware of the vibration, I observe how fast each vibration rises and passes away. I am not mindful enough to watch the episode fade and end. Sometimes there is a visual image, like millions of stars clustered together, the twinkling of the light arising and passing very fast. Should I keep thinking and observing, or should I go to the breath and the silence? Gratitude for your amazing instructions and
your guidance. The first and foremost is you must try to do nothing. But our mind never keep that, that situation. Therefore, mind is asking, what about doing this? What about doing that? What about this? That all the kind of suggestions and everything happen. So you have to tell, shut up and wait. But you will tell it at your most mature stage till that you try this and that. But by doing and practicing and manipulations, no much of a damage can happen. But ultimately you have to understand, you have to withdraw yourself. Mind never happy to do it. It tries its best to its last drop of blood to do four fingers and do this and that juggleries. So that is what we call the mind. That is the magician. So what the maturity means, autopiloting. Let it happen. Don't try to see different facets. Don't try to see the beginning, the middle and the end. Just let it manifest. And that is the way you can understand or you can get, and you can experience the freedom from ego trip. The freedom from the conceit. Freedom to the choice. This is better, this is good, what about doing this and that? That is happening due to your choice, your choiceless awareness. So that is the last thing in the sense that how learning the art of not to do anything. This is called just being. That is the most difficult thing. So, if someone is even while doing this and that, putting that button, this button and manipulation, still, if he or she is practicing continuously, definitely the maturity comes. Whether you are well instructed or not, whether you go prepared or not. But if you are instructed and prepared, easily you will understand. The best thing is, let that to happen. That is called merging into the Taoism, merging into the nature. And see your capacity to withdraw, how much I can withdraw, and let it happen. Then only you can understand what is the present moment means. What is the kshana sampatti, or the present moment. No ego trip, no conceit to measure in and out, good and bad, progressing or not progressing, nothing. And also no selection, and that is what you call the contentment. But the uncontented mind is always come out with this plan, that plan and kind of thing. But I am repeating, it won't do much of a damage, but it's a wastage of time. But no one directly go to this kind of a just be. As far as you have crafty mind, as far as you have creative mind, it never allow things to settle. Forking fingers. So this is what we are in the day-to-day activities also. we are poking fingers to others' unwanted things. And the Devi says that when I close my mind, eyes, I feel a lot of thoughts, I feel a lot of this and that. Why not? Because you are poking fingers to everything. So this is the only point you can get the direct benefit, just letting thing go. But I am telling, up to that point there is something to do. Up to that point there is a monitoring, there is a kind of gearing. But once you come up to that, let that happen is the highest of your maturity in the meditation. And even if you understand, even if for one split second, you understand who the Buddha is, what is the Dhamma is, what is the dependent origination means, what is the specific conditioning means, till that you think you can do something. My ego is very smart, I am a learned person, I am a skillful person, I can do juggleries like. So till you understand the dependent origination, depend to understand till that the Dhamma, what does it mean by, and the, till you understand the full capacity of the Buddha, you think you are also a smart guy. But the Buddha says, take me as a trust. Now you are in the safe hand. Just let it happen. This is called tatata, or letting things to happen. And full vigilant, full diligent, fully mindful. And see, nature is by itself is complete. Unless otherwise you four fingers. So this is the way, this is exactly the highest vipassana. That is the highest insight. You see the maximum capacity just to be. Then only the blooming happens.
Yes, whenever I sit or lie down to meditate and feel a certain vibration on the skin, quite pleasant. What is this phenomenon? At the same time, I'm feeling muscular tension throughout the body and occasional pain in various parts of the body. Is this what you have been talking about during the afternoon Dhamma talks regarding pleasure and pain?
Or this is something nearing to the situation, you understand, you see panoramic thing what happens, but still you do not know it is either you are doing or it is happening. You don't know whether it is a good thing or bad thing. You don't know whether it is progressing or not. So therefore, the kind of doubt is going on. So till you develop the confidence. So many ways that can be explained. And today Dhamma talk was on the feelings. On the feelings sphere also you can understand. Otherwise, if you are to go and see under an electron microscope and observe the matter, this is how it happens. Everywhere it is dancing. This is called cosmic dance. Now you feel within your capacity, within your body, so-called your capacity, your body. And when it happens, you are not happy to accept it because it is not working according to your agenda. But if you carefully start observing, there is an agenda. There is the law of the mind, the law of the physical materiality. So as far as you are not ready to accept it, you entertain doubts. But you can, that can be explained through the materiality, through feeling. And the perception wise also, that was never perceived before. Because our mind is always outwardly. It's extrovert. Whenever it happens inwardly, different blocks are there. Emotional and physical. So once the blocks are gone, you see it is also a stage, just a stage for cosmic dance. But difficult to communicate whatever the expectancy you have in the language. But this is this, for this phenomena, the language is not valid. And as far as the volitional point of view, you don't know, am I to do something or am I to just wait and see? But as much as the consciousness is working, consciousness propels, push you to do something. And consciousness also try to see what is the in and out, what is the self and non-self, what is the facets across the time, chronological, and the space, and I. But it can't find any footing. Because everything is dancing. In also dancing, out also dancing. It has its own agenda, never according to your agenda. Therefore, vijnana, the consciousness, try to get the upper hand. Unless otherwise you entertain doubts, vijnana loses its anchorage. That is called patitita vijnana. Patitita vijnana means well-anchored vijnana. So by continuous mindfulness or vipassana, slowly, slowly, they lose their grip. And they are only the way you can express is, it is anatta. There is no ego. There is no governability. There is no nothing called worthwhile. So therefore, the Buddha has given 5 terms. Anatta-to, tuccha-to, ritta-to, para-to, anatta-to, tuccha-to, ritta-to, para-to, sunya-to. Anatta means non-governable. But you can be a full-fledged observer. Tuccha-to, no value, no intrinsic value. Ritta-to, it's empty. Sunyato, that is comparatively nothing to hold, because it is full of whole universe. Parato, it is something outside. It is, you are a neutral distance observer. But what you observe is not yours. So this is good when it is happening. As I mentioned to the second question, as an answer, best thing you have to do is just be, observe it. Don't let any blocks to happen. Don't let any distraction or thing happen. Take care to give the maximum facility by not disturbing. Maximum conducive conditions by not interfering with volitional fabricating ideas and just let go. There you find that you are slowly, slowly falling into the frictionless path. You are coming to the comfort zone, as far as you are not forking fingers. So all these indicates, for my understanding, good progress. But still, you have something to do, or rather you have something not to do. Or learning the art of just being, and that is how you become mature. You become contented to observe and see. That very observation is called insight. That is called, it is insight meditation or vipassana meditation.
During breath meditation, the duration of touch from in-breath and out-breath becomes very, very short, with long periods of no primary object. When the duration of the touch of breath becomes zero at any stage, making it continuously no object meditation. Much merits to your Dhamma teachings, as I am now beginning to get a glimpse of the meditation.
So that is, I think that well understood what I try to communicate, that you test mindfulness with object and without object. Specifically when the transition is going to take place, that means that last drop of feeling of the in-breath or out-breath, when it happens, don't entertain doubts. Believe you, the mindfulness can still continue. From the object to the no-object. And there you develop, you become amphibian-like, how to live out the dry land as well as the water. So that whenever you go here and come back, you get rejuvenated. You have a fresh chance to look at your life, or rather, you reprogram, reboot your computer, completely erase everything, and reinstall as you like. You can change the hard disk, change the software, keep in the same hardware. And that rejuvenation is just like we are washing our clothes. Enough chances you get. Each time you do, you see how the undefiled mind becomes defiled. And how defiled mind can go up to the undefiled situation. Under such circumstances, defiled mind is equal to undefiled mind. So both of them are under your control. You know the defiled mind, you know the amount of defilement, and then you know how to get rid of. And then you can easily go to the undefiled state. And whatever the you effort, undefiled mind, come to the defilements. So you become equal or develop kind of a broad-mindedness. The defilement is there, but it is not a reason to be frustrated. Main thing is not to worry. These are the two states of two mind states. Look at them in an equal way. More and more you become not worrying, the defilement also loses its grounds. And the undefiled mind also nothing to face. So you see your shocks, your infliction is slowly reducing. So this is the way the giving a in-service training, like defiled mind go to the undefiled state, undefiled mind go to the defiled state. One Catholic father, he has put into this state in a word, in English word like this. At the beginning, you as a human being, try your best to get the divine experience. When you keep on practicing, your mind is divine. Once in a way, you get human experience. This is the progress of meditation. So, it is how nice. This is the way reshuffle it, and let the mind to entertain defilement. No harm, because you know how to get rid of it. Let the mind to entertain undefiled mind, but you know. Soon when it gets the chance again, it goes to the defilement. Never mind. You have both the tools. So therefore, within the range, let the mind to play. Ultimately, the mind loses the game.
Venerable sir, can you stop watching or following the breath? I will do even mindfulness. What are the techniques of watching the breath? Sir.
Watching and other one?
Confused of watching or following the breath.
Are
both okay for
mindfulness? What are the techniques of watching the breath? In practical sense, pragmatic sense, watching and following is the same. So therefore, if you know the definition, if you know the meaning of mindfulness, whether you are getting the help of the breath or whether you are observing it, or whether you are watching it, no problem. Because your main task is to, first task is to establish the mindfulness. If the mindfulness is established, don't worry about the detail about the primary object. Don't worry about the way you connect with the primary object. They become detailed. Take care about the continuity of the mindfulness, and then ultimately the importance of the bearing upon on the mindfulness of the primary object become insignificant. Slowly insignificant. After a while, you can directly go into the mindfulness without the help of a primary object.
Dear Bhante, I'm a bit confused by the clear distinction you made between samatha and vipassana meditation. Most of our meditation knowledge has come from listening to Ajahn Brahm's talks. And my understanding is that samatha and vipassana should be practiced and developed together. Apparently, Ajahn Chand used to say samatha and vipassana are like the front and back of your hand. When you look at the front of your hand, the back is still there, even though you can't see. When I said I developed awareness of the present moment by noticing my body in posture, I also focus on the breath if it comes up. But I don't try to force it. Occasionally the breath becomes subtle and turns into the beautiful breath, which is sometimes replaced by light. The lights don't last very long, and the awareness of the breath never disappears. It is there in the background. None of these are assurances that I can consciously develop. They happen very much by themselves. So instead of trying to concentrate on the breath, I try to develop contentment in the present moment and all the sensations and thoughts I experience. Ajahn Brahm says the attitude with which you watch the object is as important as the object itself. Am I doing samatha, vipassana? Does it matter if I don't really know?
I think better to be a disciple of Ajahn Chah. He don't see the difference. He is the only master you have seen. He don't discriminate. This is samatha vipassana. He says, be mindful. And as far as the Buddha is concerned, he says, samatha purvangama vipassana. Vipassana purvangama samatha and yoganatha. If you wish to see some people access into this mansion to the samatha door and then develop vipassana. Some people access from the vipassana door and develop samatha. Some people do both. So when you go high and high in the meditation, both become two tools. At the beginning, from your bottom up, look, huge difference between the samatha and vipassana. If you are looking from the top bottom level, there is no difference. So therefore, it's a matter of communication. So I think the written with a fair understanding, so therefore, try to develop the contentment, try to develop the solitude, try to develop the freedom, try to develop the relaxed mind, and let the mind to take care. The meditation to take care itself, and then not to worry whether I am went into there with the samatha way or vipassana way. Whatever may be, if you reach less and less on defilements, and more about of amount of contentment, this is the practical level. So, Perth is a very good place. I just paid a visit to Ajahn, and we had a very nice talk. And he may be very famous about the samatha. And many people put label upon me as I am a vipassana man. But we all are human. There is no difference. So therefore, this knowledge, whatever this detail it may be, don't take it as a reason to be troubled. Use it as a tool to release. The knowledge is, some people use it to damage themselves. It becomes, they don't know how to handle it. So more and more knowledge, more and more questions, more and more frustration. But the knowledge is not meant for that. It is like a very sharp weapon. In Sri Lanka, we call it, we give a barber razor to a monkey, and what is going to do? It can damage itself, that's it. But the barber is the skilled barber, he knows how to use it. So therefore, nowadays, we met Ajahn Brahmani. He told that when you go and give talks in Sri Lanka, the enormous knowledge they have. Now, the understanding or knowledge on suttas and kind of thing in the Sri Lankan lady, exceeding monks. And more questions. They are the small trivial thing also, they don't know how to use this knowledge. And they are all developing so much of things. So they are all, knowledge is not always making troubles. If you master them, but you become a slave to the knowledge becomes a hell of a problem. So they have to forget about samatha vipassana. Keep the mindfulness in front. And definitely, mindfulness will lead you, never mislead you. That much I can assure you. Never mislead you. So therefore, the person who has written with their understanding, take your contentment and the solitude as your immediate goal. Maximize as much as possible with the help of mindfulness. Sometimes you may get ditta dhamma sukha viharana, that means samatha concentration. Sometimes you get the vipassana concentration, that is to say, momentary concentration, whatever it may be. As far as the mindfulness is at the arrowhead formation, if the head others are sorted out.
Well, talking of some aspects of things, today I was trying to watch pain, and the minute I recognized pain, it just went off, so probably because of the samatha practice, just recognizing the pain, I think it went off, so I didn't really have, didn't have to go deep in, see the displeasure turning to pleasure, it immediately changed to displeasure. So likewise, I was thinking, you were saying about the excruciating pain and death, and I was sort of thinking that if one is, when one is faced with this pain, and if you can mindfully apply loving kindness and compassion to the dying body, that would get rid of that pain, won't it? Because your mind has been so conditioned by this loving kindness and compassion. Not the way like a monster, it will be things like, you know, words. But the way I learned from Ajahn Brahm and all that, it's sort of, it comes from the heart. It's genuine emotion from the heart. And wouldn't that help?
So as far as, you know it is conditioned, you are safe. That's it. As far as you know, it is a conditioning. You will not be carried away. And if you do not know, consider this as ultimate goal, then you are in trouble. So know this is a conditioning when the operation is going on. You have to give the anesthesia. Otherwise, you can't get the support from the patient. Even the patient needs any kind of a healing. So therefore, get the consent of the patient and give the anesthesia and then know that the patient is calm and docile, and then you can do the operation. So you know the value of this anesthesia. It's a kind of a condition. You make for the operation, it is necessary. Exactly the same.
Venerable Sir, yesterday you mentioned that students should communicate their experiences with their teacher even after they become arahants. However, on an early session, to an experienced child, you said if one experienced that, they know from within and they don't need to come for interviews. Fact that they are sharing it is due to conceit. Could you explain the difference, please? Is it that you are not their teacher, hence don't need to share? If so, how does a teacher take on a student? Is there a process? Thank you.
The Mahasi Shadow, the Burmese, one of the renowned Shadow, he used to say, he must be up to the Sovan level, the first Janik, the fruition, and then only he is independent. Then he can practice his own without the help of the master. That does not indicate he is not falling into pitfalls, but he can recover himself. But later, when I am practicing with Panita Sagar, he says, if you are really mastering the Udayabhyayana, that itself is enough. One can have independence and he can do it itself. That does not indicate he is completely assured, but he can recover himself. But whatever may be, whether it is so one, whether it is so Udayabhyayana, that particular person has no choice. If he is having a very good teacher, why not? And if he wish, he can go at that. But the teacher will not say, you must come and all the kind of things. So therefore, in the teaching of the Buddha, also not there is no specific instruction that each and every arahant come and report to the Buddha. And specifically, whenever Sariputta, Mahakachaya, Kottita, Punnamantani Buddha, they were really concerned about the suffering being, so they appear like going and having interview with the Buddha, but they present their own questions. It becomes a very good topic, very good discourse end up with. So these indicate they are a compassionate trick to get the verdicts of the Buddha. Appear like he go and give the volunteering him for interviews. So, but it is not a coming from Buddha. It is not a commandment or it is not a demand. They do it. So therefore, that is, you go to the Buddha, but instead if you go and practice with the Muslim person in the other door, he is not concerned about the meditation. That is not, I don't find any practical reason unless otherwise the conceit. So that is what you have to understand. You are going having interview after achieving something or not. You have the chance, if you have a good teacher, then you can either do it or not. But otherwise, when you are consulting someone on pragmatic ground, you are excusable, you have no question. But just to show off others, that is the way other conceit is working. So therefore, the very good quality that you have developed will be a skill that itself will be a defilement. If you are misusing it, this is the way our mind is tricking. Mind is becoming cheating us. So therefore, when you are discussing, you must discuss with the qualified person. Not with the other common people. That is the point where you disregard your experience as is a precious Dhamma. So, nowadays if you go to Sri Lanka, there are so much of traditions. They say, I am this and I am that and so big how. So beginners do not know where to start because the people, those who are claiming it, they have this quality and that quality, people can't see any qualities outside. So they become upset. So that is why it says, whatever the quality you develop, the wise way is to protect them. Don't show them, because you have other the progress to do, and there you have to understand. But everyone can't understand this instruction, as well as everyone are not geared for that. So therefore, even your good inside knowledges ultimately become your own impediment. Because you don't know how to tackle them. So they are very difficult, that good it is raising in the discussion. So we can openly discuss it. It's a mere matter of communication. A simple matter of communication. So enlightenment, your own self-enlightenment, we can say it's a matter of straightening of your communication lines. The moment you get the superconductivity, everything happens. No any misconceptions, no any misperception, and then understanding the truth is very easy. So when and where you have a connection with the teacher and the noble prince and the noble practitioners, what to tell and what is not to tell, you can't find in the books, but you must understand. Not to get complications, not to create problems. You must be short to the point and short and sweet what you are telling. It must have its pragmatic value. Then it is a good role model for others to follow.
Is mindfulness simple?
Definitely.
So how can mindfulness lead us to enlightenment in meditation?
The mindfulness is a mental factor. All the mental factors are, it's more impermanent than the materiality. Which is, according to the commentary exegesis and the Abhidhamma, it is materiality lasts a little longer than the mentality. So therefore, mind and the mind, mental factors are so impermanent. You can't say it is something you can put into a casket and pay respect, telling that it is my permanent friend and my dear and near guidance. It has its limited role. Once it is finished, it exits. It finishes off as it is.
So how can mindfulness lead us to enlightenment
and meditation? So when you are raising the Apollo 11 rocket to the moon, there are three Saturn rockets. First burn, and then it gives to the second, and it drops, and then goes to the third. These all three you have to burn just to exceed the gravity. So each and everyone is helpful, but everyone has to burn and drop. That is how the effect is coming. But if you're telling it is a very helpful, therefore it is a souvenir, so you have to take it to the moon, without shedding it off, what a burn. The Buddha says when you are a person going across the river, he has to make a temporary raft. So he has to cross the river, go to the other shore, and you are going to worship that raft and keep it on your head and going to go. He says, it is not the way. Either you can let it flow or put it into the dry land, say ta-ta, go. Mindfulness also, it is just on the raft. I know this is very difficult because many people after giving up the craving and giving up the hatred, that kind of thing, take the mindfulness as a crown. And they are put it and say, now I am mindful. And others are not mindful, they are bad. I am good. I am because I am mindful. And when it becomes the crown of thorns, the mindfulness also can be a example.
When the cycle of feelings which pain and pleasure is appearing in the meditation, should I divert my focus on feelings to neutralize sitting or to study the nature of feelings? Or should I really pay attention to feelings until it is absolutely necessary? Much less.
So just you start from the beginning as a, for example, observing the in-breath and out-breath. Whenever the breath becomes docile, the Buddha says, see the beginning, the middle and the end of in-breath. Beginning, the middle and the end of the out-breath. Once that you develop that mindfulness with in-breath and out-breath, you can see you are a little bit patient toward the feelings now. Earlier you are rushing and reacting, now you can see. And when and where you find the mind is docile and the feelings you can see, then see the beginning, the middle and the end. Anything, whether it is materiality or feeling or perception or whatever may be, the moment you can see beginning, the middle and the end, you are the master. As far as you can see the beginning, the middle and the end, you are the slave. But you must understand when to apply this. As far as the breath is concerned, the Buddha says, sato vasa sati, sato vasa sati. First see, this is in-breath, this is out-breath. And then see the long in-breath, long out-breath. And then see the short in-breath, that short in-breath. Then only he says, see the whole breath only. At the beginning you can't see. First you have to make it discipline, a docile. And once that happens, you apply theory of the seeing the beginning, the middle and the end, beginning the end. Whether it is a materiality or feeling or perception or whatever it may be.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
But I have been sitting long periods of time over the last couple of days. I find that my mind is really only interested in either using breath or walking and not much else, not running around with a bush or other things. And today, I followed your instructions about limiters and looking through limiters, and the result of that when they came up was that they repeated this cycle and more limiters came. And today I sat from breakfast to lunch straight. And to do that, you've got to be reasonably concentrated, I'm assuming, because number one, I did not sleep. Two, I did not fidget. And three, I did not get up and walk around. So I'm assuming that there's a reasonable degree of concentration there to just stay in one spot and focus for 4.5 hours. So in that period of time, those circles of images came and went, and they got bigger, and a couple of them started the wraparound experience we talked about yesterday and the day before. But there were lots of periods of time where there was just neutral feeling, like you have been speaking about today. And, you know, I wasn't bored by it. I don't, maybe it was some bored, but, you know, I couldn't pick it because I didn't want to try and get away, or it didn't lead me into Babancha, okay? But it wasn't juicy like Ajahn Brahm's description of the beautiful breath. It just was kind of like what you were saying before about, and the other talk earlier today about this neutral sort of thing, and I was onto it most of the time, to the point where I wasn't fidgeting and doing other things. I don't know if you might have answered my question earlier in the discussion this evening. I was going to ask you, should I try and tweak the experience of the breath a little bit in the direction of the beautiful breath, like Ajahn Mam talks about, okay? And just stay being dead neutral, you know, like that's not stale vipassana, but you know, there's a thing about vipassana being sort of, you know, pretty hard-nosed versus the juiciness of the so-and-so and the nature and all that sort of stuff. My question, should I try and nudge the breath and the feeling of the breath a little bit in the direction of metta? And if the answer to that is yes, where is the boundary where you start nudging it past that point and you start getting into proliferation and the puncture, like Sister Lupeka was talking about, where you start to nudge the breath, beautiful, blah, 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 all that sort of stuff, and go into sort of kind of like wild and very quickly. So, do you understand my question?
Oh, I hope I got it, that the neutral feeling or neutral breath or neutral this thing is, it's a very hard thing to say. It is no, I have not much of a demand in our mind. But if you go prepared, if you go well educated about this subject, you will not fall into the trap of boredom or monotony, and you can go forward. Otherwise, that monotony and other thing can happen. So therefore, in that sense, more than focusing to the beautiful breathing, this is more advanced, because the Buddha says, first you feel the difficult breathing. Once you go through, then you see the beautiful breathing, and then only you go to the neutral breathing. So these are the three steps. So therefore, if you have successfully understood this neutral feeling, which is not much juicy, it is not much sappy, but it is more natural. It is very balanced. So that is what I would recommend. And before going to that, definitely, whether you noticed or not, you have to go through the breath, which we can call beautiful breathing. And then through the maturity, it goes to natural, the neutral feeling. A neutral feeling known, you have not fallen into the boredom because of that your enthusiasm maybe, that co-preparedness, whatever it may be. But not always it is like that. Sometimes the neutral feeling going to give this lethargic boredom happens, and there you have to apply some kind of a shaking in order to make it aroused. And as far as the loving kindness is concerned, when you are reading one particular sutta known as Bhikkhuna Upasaya Sutta, I don't know whether it's a directly applied to your question, I will give a little briefing to see whether I got the point clearly. One day, Venerable Ananda, during the time of contemporary time of the Buddha, he paid visit to the nunnery and asked, how are you and what are the difficulties? Are you practicing it properly or not? So all the sisters, this is, but they're very, very good. No problem regarding the four requisites. We practice Satipatthana. How is your Satipatthana? Good. So then he go and report to the Buddha. And then when after listening, the Buddha is asking Venerable Ananda, did you teach them Panidhaya Bhavana and Apanidhaya Bhavana? Did you teach these two kind of meditations for them? Then Venerable Ananda was amused that he don't know what does it mean by what is the Panidhaya Bhavana, what is the Apanidhaya Bhavana. Then Venerable Ananda verily pay respect and says, Bhante, please out of compassion, let me know what do you mean by Panidhaya Bhavana, what do you mean by Apanidhaya Bhavana. Then the Buddha says, when you are advancing in Satipatthana, there are times mind becomes very dry, very dull, no object. At that time it is like a scattered of beehive. There is no agglomeration. They become dry. They become exhausted. Under such circumstances, you have to repair the mind with qualities of the Buddha or metta bhavana, loving kindness, so that again the bees will come and make a high, like mind become concentrated. Whenever the mind is full-fledged in the energy, you might go for apanidhaya bhavana, no object, never mind, mind is ready, still you can continue. So likewise, in the, when you keep on practicing, specifically once you go through these hindrances and kind of thing, at a time mind becomes very lethargic and bored and tired. Under such circumstances, you apply little cohesiveness, apply little glue in terms of Buddha-anusati bhavana, that's a recollecting the virtues of the Buddha, or metta bhavana, in order to make the mind again recharged. And if it is not necessary, you can continue with this, the dry one, which is not sappy, which is not juicy. So both you have to understand, both you have to employ according to the mind state, according to the mindset. Am I answering your question, or still do you have any comments?
I think so. First of all, that period of neutral feeling of state came in the second 2 hours more, and the limiters came, the limiters never come first, they didn't take about an hour in cooking. And they were cooking away for, you know, about an hour or so, and then fell away into this neutral state that you're talking about. So what you're really saying to me is if you are starting to get the first whiffs of staleness to the point where neutral is losing to stars, I don't like this at a very subtle level, then pull up the juiciness of some better technique.
Yeah.
Otherwise, stay with that bloody mind that was almost there. Just stick with it. It's not good, it's not bad, it just is.
Yeah.
And that's okay to stick with that.
Yeah, I will add little more.
Yeah, okay, I'll stick with it for 2 or 3 hours more if that was appropriate.
Yeah. I will add little more. Whenever that you know we are aiming first to understand the first noble truth, the truth of suffering. The truth of suffering have 2-4 facets. It's a torturing nature, the burning nature, and it's ever-changing facets, and multiple reasons, multiple causes making it. So whenever you are going to live with this neutral feeling for a long time, there's no juice, is anything. There's nothing sappy. It is just like a dog eating a bone without marrow bones, without flesh, without meat. Keep on eating. Oh, Panditas used to say, you are just eating white bread. No cheese, no jam, nothing to sandwich. You are just eating. And then if you are aiming at something, fame, gain, or anything, you will understand what nonsense I am doing. Because that it is not sappy, it is not juicy. But only thing is, the argument of the Buddha, when you are in the neutral feeling, no defilements. Unless otherwise you may entertain doubts. Unless otherwise you hate it. But this hateness and the doubt is not the intrinsic characteristic of this defilement, it is your ignorance. So you must be very sharp, very keen, not to disinterest creep into this situation, not to the doubt entertain it. Keep them away as much as possible, maximize the neutral feeling, so much so, it must be your second nature. You must feel, now I am at home. Whenever mind is connected to the eye, ear, nose, that is you are completely bewildered. No way, you can't wash it clean. But it is another state of mind, another paradigm of the mind. It's also natural according to the conventional truth, but you have the capacity to go to this neutral feeling. But you can't advertise upon that. You can't sell it. Even if you go and go to the supermarket, I think no one will look at that rack. Good people understand Nibbana as something very juicy, very happy, they can throw parties about and talk about it. No. No, it is just the absence of defilements. So therefore, the person, even if he is so familiar with this neutral feeling, to understand that he suffered short objective. It's a hell of a matter of view, correct view, radical reflection. If you do not have this correct view and the radical reflection, you may be keep on meditating. It is just like teaching the fish about the water. You are in it, but you don't know.
Inherently, in what you say, Ajahn, that is the home territory, is the acceptance of a grief reaction that, you know, life sucks, basically, as the Buddha said. But it's essentially, it's a grief reaction that we have to, you're asking us to digest it. We say, that's home base. Am I correct?
You happen up your end quite soon as part of the Sangha. Do you have any words of advice or perhaps key points to keep in mind for someone taking this step towards solitude and developing oneself full time to their meditative practice? With much thanks and appreciation for your guidance. You rock.
You may repeat the first sentence.
Up to be ordained quite soon as part of the Sangha. Do you have any words of advice or perhaps points to keep in mind for someone taking this step towards solitude?
Okay, that when I was in this junction, it was a long time for me. So I asked Venerable Dhammika 2-3 times that when I am mature enough, when I am ready, when I am qualified to be a monk, he says you must practice mindfulness up to the point whether you become monk or not. Equal, that is the time you are qualified to be a monk. Till that, if you think monk, becoming monk is something gain, you are utterly at lost. Monk could nothing give any solitude. So therefore, but my sincere advice is, take the mindfulness as your primary thing, and ask the mindfulness, am I expect so much of thing by becoming a monk? If it is so, is the opportunist. The monkhood is giving nothing. But if you understand, the monkhood gives some kind of a solitude, some kind of a away from the day-to-day life, and I know how to make you sit into my solitude, I know how to make you sit into all my mindfulness, then it's okay. So simple words he put into me was, whether you become a monk or not. If you feel like equal, that is the time you become mature enough to go into the monk. So I delayed my ordination 8 years. Because then only I thought, never mind, wherever I go, whatever the difficulties happen, this is my duty not to get worried about them. And to maintain my solitude, maintain my mindfulness, then only I was prepared to be a monk. And still I can remind the same thing. If you are a female, this is more alarming than a male, specifically under the Sri Lankan situation. Because the nun's life compared with the monk's life, they are in the breaking ground and they have to make the path. So therefore a lot of these kind of involvements are there. So therefore the due rest, their solitude, the due chances of mindfulness you expect may not be achieved maybe for years. So you may get disheartened. So therefore, Ajahn Chah used to say, many become monks and they are very diligent and very vigilant only for 3 years and then dissolve. But if you are going to do this kind of a game in Sri Lanka, you will be outcasted once you dissolve. So therefore, for the Westerners, of course, they are not much taking. So therefore, I am not, in any terms, any word, I am not discouraging you, anyone. We need a hell of amount of monks because so much of demand for the moment. But don't consider this monkhood is going to give you any kind of special thing, unless otherwise you earn, unless otherwise you know the art of earning of it. So to understand this art, whether monk or not, no problem. Day-to-day life, so you can understand if you take the population of the meditators in the world today, monks are the least fraction. Many are lay people. And for the last 30 years, they became so powerful, they proved while doing in a busy life, while in the multitasking, still they can do. And Sole Leris, he has written Tranquility and Insight, one book. In the first few chapters, he is looking from the situation from the Westerner's point of view. He says, due to this idea of mindfulness, the Buddhism went to the West. And they put into this mindfulness without religious frame. And put into practice, ultimately overwhelmed by the monks, those who meant for meditation, they are not doing, but instead lay people are now really showing. And in that sense also, the female part is more advanced than the males, at least in the quantity-wise. And he says, now we have come to an age whereby there are lay meditation teachers, they can give instructions. Earlier, it was completely confined to the forest meditation monks. Now it is no more. So therefore, mindfulness make that big gap fairly level. So therefore, keep the mindfulness as the foremost important thing. And if you are going to become a monk, learn it. By learning, if the mindfulness can disturb, that means that your mindfulness is not sharp enough. The way the Buddha has given the training is, you have to take it as a hobby. Still keep the mindfulness, you can be a novice, you can be a high ordination, and throughout, don't lose the sight of mindfulness. If that is the case, definitely you are successful. Otherwise, if you are going to take so much of, going to think that with the package of monkhood, you are going to get this and that, mind you, that will last only for 3 years, and then you will be discouraged.
විමානී භාවනා අපෙහිදී ඊයේ දවල් මා භාවනා කරනකොට එක් වරම මට දැනුනේ මගේ සිතේ විවිධ සිතුවිලි ඉවත් කරනවා කියන්නේ. මේක දෙකට එසේ සිතේ එන සිතුවිලි අයින් කරන අත්දැකීම ඉවරක් අදකේ. අවසානයේ භාවනා කරනකොට නැවත සිතේ සිතුවිලි අයින් කරන අත්දැකීම ලැබෙනවා. ඒක සිතේ සිතුවිලි ඉස්ලාතර ඉවත් කරන බැවින් ඒ කවුරු
So this is when it is happening, very first time, second time, third time, you can't verbalize it, articulate it, you can feel it. But if you are living in a such good atmosphere, after a while you understand this something happened accidentally, it is good. Not only that, now you can articulate it, you can tell someone, this is what happens. So you can say with respect to the feelings, or you can say with respect to the defilements, and clarity happens. So, whatever the ways and means which is facilitating this kind of a mind free of thoughts, facilitating and give conducive conditions. Whenever that come up to that level, see the possibility to start like a beginner. See whether there you can get the connection to the body or in-breath and out-breath, and then you know you go. And the Buddha, he has explained this with the word, it says samadhi sacha, nimitta gahi hoti. That means that when and where the mind is free of thoughts, and you feel this solitude, you have to get the sign of it. You have to get the features, outlook of it. And next time when you are practicing, repeat the same atmosphere as much as possible, so that mind will easily come into this empty cylinder. Whatever you put, nothing holds. Here and there thoughts are coming, but nothing holds. So, person who has not experienced it, very difficult to communicate. If someone experiences it, he or she must be promoted to find the conducive conditions, suitable atmosphere, and facilitate it, so that go again and again, and then you slowly, slowly master it. The Buddha gave a very nice example. When an eagle or hawk, before the hunting, it take a very covered, dark place and look into the prey. Because whenever the animal going to see the eagle, they will not come close, they will run away. Therefore, it hide and wait and see when the animals are in their normal day-to-day work. Not the weakest, not the which is the one I must attack. So, understanding that also amidst of the, all the other herd, and he jumped like an arrow and go and grab hold that the weakest animal and immediately jump into the air. Meanwhile, all the other fellow animals are going to make a big fighting, but can't tell because eagle is already gone into the sky. If it is falling down, eagles, the life is at danger. If it is going up, the prey's life is at danger. So when the eagle is running now, after a successful catch, Buddha says, the eagle is looking back and see, where was I before the catch? How I jump into that? How I successful? And he get the sign. When it is running out, likewise, whenever you get a good concentrated meditation, you must get the which time, which direction, whether it was it after a sitting meditation, or walking meditation, or whether it was after a good Dhamma talk, or discussion. Whatever may be the situation, you have to give, rationally you have to provide it, facilitate it, then only you can have it. And once that comes, it's very nicely explained, then very easy to catch the mindfulness on the in-breath and out-breath or whatever that this thing. And you get the rather frictionless part. So therefore, you have to assimilate your own out of your success. What are the best conducive condition for the next good start? And even then you may be at failure, never mind. Slowly, slowly your success rate will be increasing. So therefore, make use of this example and try to repeat as much as possible.
Ajahn Brahm says at the end of the meditation, always take a few minutes to review to facilitate that process you just did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a question. Not a question, but something that happened to me today about walking. It's like I felt like I was like a puppet, like being pulled. It says stand, and I'm standing. It says stop, I'm stopping, and I'm walking, I'm turning, you know, being commanded, like, good, good, good. And then I stopped, and I couldn't move after that. I just stopped, and I just realized I could pull, I could disconnect and pull the plug off there. But why can't I do this? In this saga of life, stop, pull the plug off from life happening and Baba making. Why is that so difficult?
That means you, that you become immovable.
Yes, and just frozen. I went to samadhi. I hit a beautiful samadhi. I felt and I just stopped and I couldn't move anymore because I just wanted to stop, not going further. It's enough. Like life continuum.
Enough means not walking or
life
enough?
Life continuum stopping. It's like life not continue, like samsara stopping, cutting off. That's the sort of feeling I got there.
Yeah.
And that sort of insight made me feel very, like samadhi.
So if it is a samadhi, how can you talk about samsara?
Why What I felt was, when I felt samadhi, just peace, I said samadhi the wrong way, it was very peaceful to know one can stop, one can put the plug off, you know.
No, that is why that whole rationality is disturbing the samadhi. They are talking about two things. That everything happened very smoothly, now you ought to poke your fingers.
That when it happened, the samadhi happened, but yeah. Now I'm talking about it.
No, I mean that, but then what is the question?
Why, like this person when he dies, why can't I pull the cord off there? Plug off to stop that becoming the mind
that is the very thing that you don't understand what you experience under your very nose and what your rational mind, your deductive knowledge, these two are mixed up.
That's what's happening,
you
get confused
sometimes. So then what is the question? But there is no question, because whenever such a mind come out of the peaceful state, you try to fork theoretical knowledge or deductive knowledge and ask, how can I bring it back to the death moment?
That's that the word comes.
That is why that. So when such a thing happens, withdraw yourself as much as possible, because you are in a good, experienceable, contented situation. Why should put this deduction rage and why make questions? Now, no point. Because you will know how to earn, you don't know how to protect. And you are smartness or rationality, deductive knowledge, influential knowledge is forking. And you don't know which one to promote. That's the question. Very clear that you have to promote what is your direct experience. And of course, get rid of this inferential. That is the infestation. Don't let that pure state to get infested with this inferential knowledge, with this rationality. And it is a poison. It's a poison to that state. Because this state is very pure. So if you have any doubt whether the inferential knowledge is the highest or the direct knowledge, make it sure the direct touch in the Swami Vivekananda was one of the good the yogic master. He says, instead of tons of theoretical knowledge, 1 ounce of experience is worth. Even if it's calculated by tons. But direct touch is the one we are missing. So when it happens, don't inoculate with this all the muck. Don't let the mind to play game. Don't try to show magics.